cool about Valentine's Day is that for Murray Beer, is Murray here? It's just bailed out.
Yeah.
For Murray Beer, he is 2 days early on Valentine's Day. Because he freaked out this morning. We had like the service team today, we were over here to pray, and when I did my bit of going like, oh, today because of Valentine's Day, and you know, gonna talk about the theme today, Murray just freaked. He was just like, oh, and I'm going, don't worry, bro, it's not till Tuesday. So it's like, so today is a good day, and I'm glad that for all the other, oh, I forgot, people in the room, I'm giving you a heads up, you got 2 days to go, okay, so it's okay, you can just chill a bit. But this guy here that I was reading in the paper on Friday, he is way ahead of the game. So who read this article, front page? Yeah, a few of you, man, it's not that popular these days, I work out of times, I'm not sure what's going on. But this guy here, his name is Philip Worth, and he is worth a lot, this chap. This guy here, farmer looking for Mrs. Wright, somehow he chucked his name on a Facebook page, and he got free front page advertising for a Valentine's Day date. Check that out, front page, Friday's paper. And it gives a whole profile on the guy, and he's looking pretty cool there, pretty suave. And he's a dairy farmer, but he says he's not loaded because it's a family farm. So he is, really. But what's interesting about old Phil is that Valentine's Day, this day when we express love for others, and in our culture that tends to be like a romantic kind of love. I know that for some of you from Colombia, the Valentine's Day is more about a friendship to everybody love, so you've got to buy everybody roses and chocolates, whereas here just sort of that's your one and only. But you can buy me roses and chocolate, that's okay. But what's interesting with Phil here is that Phil is looking for love. He really is. When you read his article, he's actually looking for love, and he's just going, I've been scared off woman for the last 3 years, and I'm just trying to find one, so if you can help me. So they went, yeah, we will. We'll put you on the front page, and we'll see what we can do. And the other thing is that if you date Phil, then Phil gets to have Waikato Times pay for it. So, I mean, if you're the lady responding to Phil, you would expect him to pay for it anyway, I guess. But it gets paid for, like a night out. So this is what he says. This is his ideal first date, okay? He says, out for dinner, yeah, and a movie, yeah, and maybe a goodnight kiss. And I was just like, you what? Like, it's your first date, you're expecting a goodnight kiss. It's like, not back in my day. Hey? Man, so that's for what... Yeah, I mean, we laugh about it and we think about this thing of love and of Valentine's Day, but there's a real sense in which every single one of us is looking for love. We just long to have somebody who would look at us and just adore us, that would accept us as we are, that would highly value us, that would be there for us no matter what happens. And even that little song, that little jingle from way back, what the world needs now is love, sweet love. And it's talking about not just for some, but for everyone. Everyone has that need. And I think sometimes we think the reason that we need love is because of the absence of love, there's the presence of the opposites of love. So we go, oh, we need love because I feel rejected. We need love because people are hostile towards me. We need love because I just feel that I have no value, and so we need love to fill the gaps. But I'd suggest to you that there's a greater need of love in us that's maybe not even a need, but it's actually a fulfillment of who we are. That something deep within you and I, placed there by our Creator, has a need, if you want, but it's more than need. You know, we think of needs as filling a gap or fixing something that's broken. It's more than that. We actually, we're just designed, created to be beings who just loved. Just grab your Bible and have a look at 1 John. 1 John 4. And I think in many ways, this is such a, I don't know, such a foundational truth that John says. John is the follower of Jesus, and when he's writing his letter, his story about Jesus, he actually says these words. He says, the disciple whom Jesus loved, that's how he names himself. It's like his nickname. He gives it to himself, which you could say is a bit arrogant, but he actually understood this. He understood Jesus' deep love for him, and so when he talks about himself in his book, he says, "I'm the disciple Jesus loved." Now, when he writes this letter, a long time later, he's an old man who has experienced Jesus' love throughout his life. And then he's an old man, and he's writing this letter to the church family. And he actually calls them my dearly loved children. So John's like the love guy. He's like the love doctor, I guess. And as he comes in here, it's interesting what he says about love. Let's just start at verse 7. 1 John 4:7. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. I mean, we could just do the first part. Hey, friends, let's love each other. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. We're all looking for it. So let's just get on and love each other. But John goes further than that. He says, you've got to know the source of that love. And you've got to know the measure of it. You've got to know what it is. And you won't know what it is unless you've been to the source. And he says, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. That he's saying something radical here. He's not saying God is a loving being. He's saying God's essence is love. Verse 9. This is how God showed his love among us. So he's going like, if you want proof, if you want evidence that God is love, he's showing love. Love isn't just said, it acts. And this is how he did it. He sent his one and only Son, that's Jesus, into the world that we might live through. This is love. Not that we loved God. And that's important to note, that the reason that there is all these opposites of love, like hostility and rejection and abuse and anger and loss of self-worth, the reason all these things are in place is because we as humans find ourselves in the space where we don't naturally love God. It's something that's been broken in humanity. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. He sent Jesus to die for us. Verse 11, dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. That's the story of love. That's where love really is sourced, is in God, our Creator. And it's been expressed through his Son, Jesus, coming to give his life for us on the cross. And we today can experience that love and become those who love others as we have been loved. This year at CBC, that's our theme for the whole year. So it might sound it's going to be repetitive. It is. Because we want to be in this theme until we get it. I need this in my life. I need to know and experience the love of God in such a way that it will radically change the way that I love Lorraine, the way that I love my boys, the way that I love my neighbors next door, the way that I love my friends, the way that I love my church, the way that I love people and maybe in a distant place who have great need that I can help fill. But it's got to come from a deep source. Now, last week, we began a little bit of a story about octaves. And we're going to invite them up in a moment. But I want us to carry on that story about octaves and the journey he's on. Because octaves, in a way, is like looking for love. Okay? Now, don't worry, it's not a dating agency. It's not like White Coat at Times. I'm not going to put them on the front page of the paper. But there's a search going on in his life that I think, in a way, parallels the need that all of us have. And I want us to hear some more of that story today. So, Octaves, you want to come on up? Come and join me here. Cool. Let's give him a hand, eh? Here you go. Welcome. Brings a smile to your dog. Okay. For those that don't know, I want to fill you a little bit about Octave's story, and then as we go, because I'm the storyteller, but Octave's is under this quite serious sometimes, and also on the other flip side of that really funny exterior, so either one or the other, there's some in-between emotions that I want to probe into a bit today, so that they can share with us what's going on inside his heart and head. But Octaves came into our family as a 17-year-old. Coming into our family is a significant step. I'm just happy anybody can come into my family. Okay, just anybody, just come on, like, we got room, come and stay. For Lorraine, it's a bigger step. Do you want to shoot that next picture? Yeah, so there's Lorraine and Octaves. That's last year at a dance battle in Auckland. But when, for Lorraine, Lorraine's happy to have people over home, but for somebody to stay at our house, to like live there, she's got this little thing that she has to go through in her head and heart, which is to go, can I take this boy into our home and love him as one of my own? That's like her little thing. Now, to start with, it's easy for you because you just came for 2 weeks. So she didn't have to figure that one out in the first, you know, to start with. Because some stuff was going on for Octaves and needed somewhere to live. And we said, you can come stay at our place for 2 weeks. That was like 10 years ago.
I never left.
but I know that as that 2 weeks, we unfolded that 2 weeks, I know that for Lorraine, that was part of her process, you know, and in some ways she'd be great to have up here interviewing you because she's, you and her have like a heart connection that comes from that very thing where she's gone, you're going to be one of my own, you know, I'm going to treat you as I would my own. So I think that's been a significant part of our family knitting together and you becoming a part of that. But also when you came into our family, just shoot that next photo. Yeah, the boys, we're a boy family. So for those that don't know us, we don't have girls in our family. Although lately, because of the age of the boys, girls keep coming over. but that's okay. So it's a boys family. And I think, Octaves, you brought lots of life and fun and colour to our family. And we've been a family unit for a long time now, for around 10 years. Some interesting things used to happen. You had a special photo of you and somebody that people used to question, like, who was that lady?
Oh, yeah, Grandma Fallon.
Yeah, so there's Octaves and Grandma Fallon.
So I had a photo in my room when I was playing in Hamilton, and every time I had friends over, they'd be like, who is that? And I'd be like, getting rid of it, oh, wait, that's Grandma. And they're like, who's that?
Yeah, so
I told her story 5 times and I said, don't worry, just call her Grandma.
So you have been part of our family, but we've also known that you have a family. Like, I mean, we're family to you and we've loved having you, but we've known the whole time that you have your own family. I mean, you came here with your auntie, she's family. You left a whole family behind in Gabon and in Congo. And the way that had happened was in Congo, where Octaves was living, civil war broke out when you were 7 years old. Yeah, 7. And so as the war broke out and Octaves was in Brazzaville, his dad and his auntie were both involved with the then president around security and military. And so they were part of the people, the body of people, who just had to flee Gabon at the Congo at the time to Gabon because it was unsafe for them to stay. So as a 7-year-old, Octaves fled with his family to Libreville in Gabon. And you were there quite a long time, like you were at school there.
Yeah, primary school in 2 years ago. A year and a half at high school.
Yeah, so almost like a normal kind of life there. And then had the opportunity where he came with his auntie to New Zealand as a refugee in 2006.
Yeah.
So that's his background story. What we want to jump to is what's going on now, which will still relate back, but just chuck that next photo up, thanks. So look at that cute kid. He's got chubby cheeks. this photo is taken when Octaves is very little, about one. And that's with Octaves' mum, okay. And Octaves' mum passed away when he was 3. What memories do you have of your mum or life? You know, because 3 is pretty young. Do you have any memories of that?
No, that photo is the only thing we really have. So
yeah,
no other memories.
So there, it's been a massive missing piece for Octaves. Now, Octaves, soon after your mum died, you relocated to be with your dad's family, which was Brazzaville.
Yeah.
And so the next period of time was all with your dad's family. What interaction did you have with your mum's family over that time?
So just before the war broke out, there was an interaction for about maybe 2 years before that, so up until I was 7.
Yeah.
So I had my aunties who would come and visit. Take me out shopping, whatnot. So that's the only thing I can remember from that age is just them coming over, picking me up, taking me for the day, bringing me back for our stay that night with cousins, and that was the one interaction I really had.
And you were just sharing with me last night, you have one memory of a certain auntie turning up one day and that interaction with your dad.
Yeah, so I had one auntie who came to see me. She was visiting from France. She's come on my holiday. And I was about six. And I just remember her as being a very, very passionate person and emotional.
You didn't even recognise who she was. You were saying she's like a stranger in the street. Suddenly she's seen your dad and it's like they're old friends.
She saw a friend of hers that they grew up together. They went to school together. So she came to visit me before we went out, and the friend was walking on the footpath, just happened to be in front of my house. And they sort of looked at each other like, what? Is it you? As in, what? And they hugged and they both just cried and cried. Here's me, confused 6-year-old, going, why are these two ladies crying? Well, you know, this should be a good thing. As in, I haven't seen you in a long time, how have you been? Let's catch up. But they were just crying. But it was tears of joy.
Yeah.
And this is the only memory that I know of that auntie is, she's quite passionate. And if she hasn't seen someone for a long time, yeah, she'll cry.
She cries. Okay, that's cool. That's important information. We're going to come back to that. So then you went from Congo to Gabon, and you're still with your dad's family, but there's no connection with your mum's family.
No.
So we were trying to work out the other day, it's about 19 years since Octavius has had any contact or any information about his mum's family. 21, is it?
Yeah.
Wow, that's ages.
Yeah,
because it was pre-deleted. So 3 years ago, we were going to go, you and I were going to go to Congo and to Gabon to trace your family and to visit locations. And you were pretty keen with that, and we were to the point where we'd actually done the full itinerary and we were about to pay for tickets, and then you chickened out. And primarily because you didn't really know if you were wanted there. Like you were in contact with your dad's family.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was definitely really, really keen to go. Now that I think about it, it was a good choice being a chicken at the time. But not only that, when I was calling them saying, oh, yeah, I'm coming, I didn't quite feel as if they really, really, really wanted me to come home. So it was just more like, oh, cool. And it was just a phone call. And after the phone call, I thought, I'm not going to go somewhere where people are not that happy to see me. Maybe it was something else, maybe they're just having a bad day, but that affected me on that particular phone call, and I just sort of thought I'll leave it for now. And I went in and came, I said, oh, the trip is off. And he said, okay, for how long? 6 months, a year? I said, a couple of years. And that was 3 years ago. I didn't feel quite really after that phone call to my dad's family.
Yeah, and I know at the time it's like you just shut the trip off, but I think as time's gone on you've realised that it was that deep I'm not wanted kind of thing, and you're just feeling that in a sense of rejection. They might not have been rejecting you, but that's what you felt.
Yeah, that's what I felt, yeah. Mel would be there, but yeah, just on that particular day, it's what it felt like.
Yeah.
And
move forward to now, suddenly you come and you go, I've decided I want to go to Congo. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm always up for a trip, but I don't have to go. It's your call. If you want me to go, I'll come be support. And you said you can come. And I was like, yep, we're in. So we decide to go. And it's almost like this time you were determined in that no matter what you received back, you were going to go because you wanted to go and see. And a lot more detail came out to me. You want to go and see your mum's town and try and find her family, and you wanted to see your dad's town, and you wanted to see the house you lived in Brazzaville, and you wanted to go back to Gabon where you went to school. So we started to sort of, I guess, try and figure out what that would look like and what it would take for us to do, and we've been on that journey for a few months, trying to get visas, trying to get, getting all the jabs. Man, I've gone through so many needles for you, had to drink all sorts of weird stuff, got rabies now, I'm not sure what's going on. But when we came to just a few weeks ago, somebody really prompted you to say you need to get on with the search for your mum's family. So rather than go armed with a photo and a name of a town and your mum's name, and when we get there we'll try and find her, they were saying, why don't you start the search now? Why don't you get into that? And I think it's really weird because that was that time when, a few weeks ago, Lorraine and I went and watched Lion at the movies, who I told you about last week, about the Indian guy from India who was living in Tasmania and traced his family back through Google Earth. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, that's Hollywood, you know. But no, it's a real story. And then it's like, you have a real story. Like, you have a Facebook story where you decide to use Facebook to try and find your mum's family. So tell us, at the beginning, how did you start that search?
So the search didn't just start a few weeks ago. It started a few years ago. Every now and then I'll get online and try to type in the last name and see if there's anything, any clues or... Yeah, just... I mean, I have nothing but an old photo from 25 years ago. So I would usually just type in the family name and hopefully something will come up. I mean, it's 2016 or 20... This is like maybe 2013 I started doing this. But I actually never had any luck at all. Google, Facebook, just anything really, nothing came up. So 3 weeks ago, I looked up the name of the town on Facebook. I just typed in Makua, so the name is Makua. So I typed in Makua on Facebook and there was a whole lot of stuff about Makua. People hashtagging Makua. I was like, whoa, there's hashtags in Congo. so that was literally lots of stuff about Makua and Google. You type something on Google and it would show something else. And it's like, well, I'm not looking for fish. I'm looking for a town. Like, as in, just totally random stuff. So I put it on Facebook this time and I found three groups. Facebook groups, and one of them was quite big. It had about 3,500 people in it, so I requested to join the group.
We were cracking up about, we didn't know anybody in Macquarie was on Facebook.
Yeah. 3,500 people in a group. I was like, whoa, 3,500 people in a Facebook page now. Yeah, so I requested to be added on to the page, and I am from Macquarie, as in my mum's from there, but I'm not from there. I haven't been there since I was three. So if the person who accepted the request had to look through my Facebook, saw me like in Sydney, in Auckland, they'd be like, no. But I was quite glad that I actually accepted. They said, oh yeah, yeah, you can be part of the group. So I got a notification that I was part of the group. Now, I did not act on it. I didn't do anything. This is maybe 3 weeks ago. And I was having a conversation with someone last week on Wednesday afternoon after work. And I said, oh yeah, I found this page, but I haven't actually posted on it yet. I haven't asked anyone. So they're like, oh, I think you should. And I thought, you know what, maybe I should. So last week, Wednesday night, just a normal, had dinner, went up to my room, and here I am again with Facebook, went on the page, and sort of looked through it, trying to see people's last names, to see maybe someone has that same last name as my family, if any of them is, I don't know, kind of related to me. At, you know, any level. So I left the page, went into Word document, typed up this really long sort of message, as in I'm looking for my family. And I've been here for 11 years, so my written French is not that good. So I had to like put it on Word, make sure it's, you know, spelled out correctly and the sentence makes sense and everything. So I did that, and then I copied and pasted it on Facebook, and I just hit post. So on that post, I put in my name, where I was born, my mum's family, and I just say, does anyone on this family at all? Like, anyone alive? Anyone not alive? You know, I just needed something, you know, just a clue. So by that time, this is last week, Wednesday, about maybe 11 p.m. So put it there. Within half an hour, two people commented, but they're just asking more questions. I'm like, well, I'm the one asking questions here. You don't comment on my post and ask me questions. So they were quite irrelevant. And this one guy commented and said, oh, yeah, I know your family. I was like, oh, now we're talking. And he gave me two names. And he said, oh, you've got family everywhere in this town, in this city, in this town. So he gave me two names. And someone else commented saying, oh, I know where your family home is. And I was like, what? So the first guy who gave me two names private messaged me and gave me six more names. And they all had the same last name. I was like, okay, now we're getting somewhere. So you know, he said, oh, here your cousins, add them on Facebook, tell them who you are, and I'm sure they'll know who you are. So I added about 9 of them in total on Facebook and sent them the same message. I was like, this is me. I'm looking for, are we related? I know you might have the same last name, but there could be 2 or 3 families in that town with that last name. So I sent everyone that same message. And
that was about when you rang me.
Yeah.
Because you went, check this out, and we're both online, like talking to each other.
Yeah.
And he's going, see this photo, who's this? And this is one of the people that you're trying to send a message to. And he's going, do they look like me? And he's like trying to figure out if this is one of my cousins. And I'm doing the whole like face thing, trying to go like this and get a photo of him beside him, going, yeah, maybe your lips, I'm not sure. And so it was pretty funny.
Yeah,
we were having a bit of a laugh.
We're on the phone, and I go, Juan, I'm just going to send you something on Facebook. So he goes on Facebook, and I'm like, and I hit send. And one of the names that I was given, this girl, she honestly looked like me, but with long hair and makeup.
Yeah.
Now imagine me with long hair and makeup.
Yeah,
that's that girl. Like, literally, yeah. So and she had the last name too, so I clicked on her photo, I was just going, whoa, slow down. I haven't seen myself in a moment before. I was like, oh, this is kind of scary. So I added her and sent a message of who I was and everything. And I added, I sent the same message to 4 other people with that same last name. And this is about maybe 11:30 that night. And then I went to sleep. I had work the next morning, obviously. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, literally 3 o'clock in the morning. Who gets phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning? My Facebook went off. Like, I was getting a call through Facebook. And it was one of the messages that I sent. So someone, you know, was replying. So it's just 3 o'clock. And like, oh, hi, my name is Rain, and I'm your cousin. But it's 3 o'clock. I'm half asleep. When you say you're my cousin while I'm sleeping, so? So right, that's not the part that woke me up. She introduced herself, told me who she was, but I wasn't awake then. And it's the next words that sort of woke me up to, like, sort of, as in, oh, this is not a dream. She said, we've been looking for you. And this is 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't cry at 3 o'clock in the morning, but on that night, as soon as she said that, I just stopped talking. I said, I was awake, literally, like, just like that. As soon as she said those words, we've been looking for you, and I was up, and I sat up straight, and just sort of holding my phone, and waterworks just literally that, yeah, I could fill a bucket that night. And you know, I asked him, like, oh, you know, whose child are you? Because I haven't actually met her, she's only 20. So now, back there right now, just say she's neither here because she found me first. So she's like, oh, I'm this uncle's daughter, and you know, dad always talks about you and always wonders like where you are and what you've become, and the whole family's been, you know, wondering what happened after war, like, did they kill you somewhere? And, oh no, opposite. They feed me here.
So what's interesting is that this unfolding of discovery for you is, and you say that's what woke you up, is,
yeah,
that we've been looking for you.
Yeah.
As time's gone on and you've started to interact with different cousins and even uncles and aunts,
yeah,
it's like you're hearing the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, we've been looking for you, we've been wondering where you are. What does that do for you? How does it make you feel? Like, what's going on in you as you hear those words?
Yeah, it took me a good 48 hours to process all of that. Because seeing how many years I haven't had that, you know. Last time I had it, I was a child, so I don't remember. But, yeah, for the first sort of 48 hours, I was just trying to process what they were saying and that they've been looking for me, and it just sort of makes me feel that, you know, I'm wanted somewhere, and
yeah,
there's a place for me somewhere, and it's a feeling that I've had it here countless times, but that's a different feeling, if you know what I mean. You can go anywhere in the world, but home is home. So when she said we've been looking for you, it just felt like, oh, that's my blood talking to me.
Yeah.
On the outside of the world. So yeah, and every day there's new cousins adding me on Facebook and you know, new aunties and stuff. So, yeah, it's...
Because I think the thing that I suddenly realised over those few days was the connection to your mum. Like, yeah. the other part of the story that I didn't say before, just shoot to that next slide, that this is your dad, and you and your dad were close,
yeah.
And then when you were 13 years old, your dad died,
yeah.
in Gabon. And so you've had a long memory of your dad. I know that when it's your anniversary of your dad's birthday or of his passing, and same with for your mum, they're very quiet days for you.
Yeah.
But in recent years, you've been able to express more, and especially about your relationship with your dad, because you had a relationship with him.
Yeah.
And you've had ongoing connection to him through family. Whereas to your mum, you've had no connection to your mum, and suddenly now, not just having connection, but connection that wants you, that's given Octave's direct connection to his mum that he hasn't had. What's amazing on the other end is the response has been phenomenal, because for them, they have had no connection with their sister, with their auntie. And now they're going, we're so excited because we're going to have a connection. This connection of family is so strong. Hey, look, for time, we just got to jump to that you went back to bed. Like, as you went to bed, what were your sort of closing words?
Yeah, so I gave her, you know, I sent her a few photos and she gave me a few names. And my auntie has been in France for quite a while, since the 80s. And she's married and she's got two kids. So she gave me the kids' full names. So I looked them up on Facebook as well and I found them. But I wasn't quite sure because the photos that I have of them, they're kids. And then there's this, you know, grown up, long hair, beard, snapback. Guy on Facebook, and I'm going, can this guy grow into this baby? So I just add him anyway. I send a message again saying, are you my cousin? Are you my auntie's son? If you are, hello. Kind of thing. And I got given more names. So I sent photos and another message, and I went to sleep. But before I went to sleep, I just prayed. This is by now it's like 4:30 in the morning, and I've got to work at 8. And I just prayed. I said, Lord, if this is really them, just give me an answer when I wake up. Really short prayer. And I went to sleep. Woke up. I slept through my alarms. Stay up on that. It was too tired to go to work at 7:30, 8, it just wasn't happening. At 9 o'clock, I woke up again for the fourth time. I looked at my phone. The cousin in France had replied, saying, oh, I can't believe it. Yes, I'm your cousin. And by that time, while I went back to sleep, phone calls had gone left, right, and center. Congo, France. Congo. Yeah. So people were just like, we found him. Freaking out. So by that time, my auntie, who I most remember, was at work. And on her way home from work, her brother called her and said, my uncle called her and said, oh, we found our son. And she thought he was joking because it's been, you know, so many years. And said, oh, yeah, no, it's been found. And there was a Facebook thing and... So she was on the bus home, and she just, again, cried.
Yeah. Just pick that picture up. This is his auntie here.
Yeah, so that's it. So this is probably the last time I saw her, in 95, yeah.
So she's crying on the bus?
Yeah. So
you're telling me the bus driver stopped the bus?
Yeah, the bus driver just stopped the bus going, what's going on? Are you Kennedy? She just goes, you better drive. That's, you know, I need to get home.
Yeah.
So then she gets home, opens the door, and her son, my cousin who I messaged, comes to her and say, hey, we found him. And she's just going, what's going on? You know, first your uncle calls me, and now you, and then she's like, yeah, he messaged me on Facebook. And she again cried some more. So I was messaging with him, with the cousin, her son, while she was getting, she just got from work. And he set us up for Skype, a session. And this is about 9 o'clock. I sent a text to my work. I said, I'm not coming in to 12 because I knew it was going to be a long morning. So he set it up and we're on Skype. And so I made the call. And by this time, I'm nervous, scared, don't know what to expect. Just in that 20 seconds that the phone is ringing, when you make a Skype call, you just start looking at the screen going, okay. So I literally had a blank moment there, and her video came up. And there was just, for a good 2 minutes, there was no words for me or her. I started crying, and she cried, and I cried again, and we cried together. I was just literally, for me, I didn't know this day was going to come so soon before the trip. So it was very, very, very emotional, and she's like, I thought they killed you, and I was like, no, they didn't. Very, very touchy moment. Because when I saw her, it made me, I was thinking, well, you haven't aged. I didn't tell her that. For the first time, I've got someone to tell me about my mum. You know, and it was it. And for her, having to tell me about her sister brought some flashbacks as well. So, we spent about 2 hours on Skype and about 45 minutes of it, all just tears. It was very, very emotional. And,
One of the really cool things is, as we've been planning the trip, we were going to go through London. That was our preference, was to go through London. And just because of timing and fears, are going through Paris. That's just how it worked out. And then all of a sudden, Octave has found out, like, oh, I know we're staying in Paris now, because she lives 30 minutes out of the centre of Paris. And we're going to be with Octave's auntie there, meeting her. But what was cool was that I was in a meeting upstairs, and my phone rang, and I saw your name come up on the phone. And I knew, because of the conversation the night before, that the search was on. So I took the call, and I called Lorraine, and she happened to be in the door at the time. And when I picked up to answer the phone, your words were, I've found them. And then you just like burst into tears. And like we've said, I mean, Octave doesn't cry a lot. It's all pretty bottled up. But just those words, I've found them. And just the joy, but also just the heart release of that time was just amazing, you know. And then you shared with us what had happened over the night. This is a story that we're in the middle of at the moment, and so there's lots of conversations being had since, and more cousins found, and my boys think it's cool because they got more cousins now that they can't speak to because we can't speak French, but that's okay. But it's exciting now. It's like it's given almost like even more purpose to your journey back.
Yeah, definitely.
You're going to get to go. And for example, you know that place where the photo is of him and his mum, that's still there. We're going to get to go back to that place and to that home, but also especially to meet the people and your family and for them to meet you. I think it's just as significant for them. But just as we wrap up, like as you anticipate going home, like what does this mean for you? Like and how do you feel? Like what's running through your mind as you think about what is it? We worked out 6 weeks to go, and then we're going to be there.
6 weeks today, isn't it?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's something that I've wanted to do so I can not just move on in life, but I can have a closure. Because, the last few years, I can be happy and I can, you know, make jokes and laugh. And, you know, as I grow, it's still quite there, like really fresh. The questions are still unanswered. So I feel like after this trip, I'll be somehow complete and accept the fact that, you know, the answers that I will get there, whether they're good or bad, I just have to sort of take them on and properly move on. I'm looking forward to that.
No, that's going to be cool. Hey, thanks for sharing with us, and I know that there's more to come, but we just want to pause and just pray for you as a family. We'd love to do that. Let's just stand as a prayer. Just for all of us, just, and a lot of you know, have known Octave for a lot of years, and just would you just bring him before our Father on to Father God, I thank you that we're in your family and we're deeply loved. But we all have this need to be loved by others around us, and especially by our own personal family. And sometimes that's just beyond our reach, and it seemed like that for Octave for a long time. Thank you that you've answered his prayer. Thank you that you have just given him this great gift of connection to his family. And we're just asking that in the weeks ahead as he prepares, that you'll prepare his heart. You'll prepare the way, you'll prepare the circumstances, the relationships, the journey, and that it will just be a great time of healing and of filling him up, not just with the love of his family, but with your love. Thank you that you so love this son of yours, this child of yours, that you've gifted him this reunion of family. And we just want to praise you for that, Lord God. We're going to have a look at Genesis 29, but we'll do that next week because I think that some of this is too important to sort of move to the next. And this is a fresh thought, so hopefully I can shape it because it was something I was thinking this morning as I was just sitting at my breakfast table, having my breakfast and chewing over the notes. And, was this, that you and I are all part of a family. Part of God's family, our Creator, who has loved us, shown His love through His Son Jesus, welcomed us in by faith and come to live in us by His Spirit. We're in a family. I think for some of us, that family belonging is a little bit like Octave's birth family belonging. It's ours, but it's a little bit lost. We don't have the connection there that we wish we did. And it may even be that you find yourself in a physical family that's well and whole even, but there's a gap of belonging in the sense of knowing who am I in not just my home, you know, 229 Baberstock Road, but who am I in my life? Who do I fit? Where do I belong? Why am I here? What is this all about? And then for some of you, you add to that that you don't have a whole physical family around you as well. That makes it even more complex. And I guess today I just want to invite you into the journey of going, why don't you in 2017 go, this is the year that I find out who I am. This is the year that I'll do what it takes to discover this family I'm in, where God is my Father, where His Son Jesus so deeply loves me that He would call me brother and friend, and that the Spirit of this God is in me and with me and never to leave me. But right now you might be feeling that you say, I don't even sense that I'm in that family. I don't even know what that means. I don't even know what that looks like. And I say, why don't you discover that this year? Why don't this is sort of like the start of our year of looking for love? Maybe today you make this sense of commitment where you're just going, God, I want to know you this year. I want to know that you love me, and I want to experience that in such a way that it will change me to be a person of love. I just want to read some closing verses. We read these words earlier. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we ought to love one another. We go down to verse 19, it says this. We love because He first loved us. Because He first loved us. That's got to be first. Do you know that you're greatly loved today? Maybe you do within your family. Maybe you don't. Maybe you're longing for that. Maybe you need to go on that kind of a journey too. But do you know that He loves you? Deeply. He's shown it. He's present with you. And he's placed you in a family within which you can discover it. And He's given you His word, which is His love letter to you. And hey, Tuesday morning when you wake up, Valentine's Day, He's the first. He's the one who's going. You are my Valentine. I love you. Let's just pray. Lord Jesus, You so love us. And You don't want us to be alone. You don't want us to be lost. You want us to belong. And to know that we're accepted. And then You want, not just that, You don't just want to restore us to Your love and to belonging, but You want to then love through us to the world. And I just ask that this would be a year that You would so touch our hearts, so grab hold of us and hold us tightly that we would just know more than anything else that we belong, that we are accepted, that we are loved, because you have loved us. You've shown us your love through Jesus, and you are with us by your Spirit. And somehow, Lord, that could be our whole focus, but it's beyond that. We want them for you to flow your love through us to others. May this be a community who love one another, deeply love you, and by this all people will just look on in our lives and go, man, you are followers of Jesus because you love locally. Lord, we pray again for Octaves today. We just pray that he might know your love today. But I pray if there's anybody here today who's just feeling broken and hurt, maybe even lonely, that you by your Spirit would help them to know that they are loved. But help us as a family to love one another and be ministers of their love.